FRU 93.3 FM 250 watts of community power in Guelph.
CFRU 93.3 and Guelph's Feminist Resource Network celebrate the achievements of women. Buffy St. Marie is a folk musician, digital artist, educator, and activist. From the beginning of her career, Buffy used her musical voice to bring attention to Native issues. She was inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame in 1995 and was responsible for creating the Juno Award for Music of Aboriginal Canada. In 1997, she founded the Cradle Board Teaching Project, which introduces students to accurate information about Native history and culture. Buffy continues to affect change and increase awareness about Aboriginal concerns in her work as an artist and activist. This public service announcement is part of the series celebrating women's stories.
Hey everybody, I'm Kelly Jones, and you're listening to Pioneer Radio.
Let's talk about radio, because radio is so good.
I'm going to tell you something, Flacca, and I want you to listen tight.
Telling stories to regular folks is not a trivial thing.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Even if it's hard to explain, even if you know they don't really want to hear it, not really, I urge you to give it a try.
You have my undivided attention.
Take a chance, find the words, find the metaphor, share the beauty. Tell them a story.
Today on Pioneer Radio, we're talking about borders. In the background of this discussion is Israeli Apartheid Week. Israeli Apartheid Week is an annual international series of events intended to educate people about the nature of Israel as, quote, an apartheid system, unquote, and to garner support for the Palestinian civil society's call for boycotts, disvestment, and sanctions of Israel. Needless to say, this is a politically charged project. And at the heart of the nuanced, complicated divide between Israel and Palestine lies a very literal divide, a security fence known as the West Bank Barrier. Once completed, the fence will stretch for 760 kilometers between Israel and Palestine. Supporters of the fence argue that its purpose is to keep Palestinian terrorists from infiltrating Israel. Those opposed cite problems of reduced freedom of movement, road closures, loss of land, increased difficulty in accessing medical and educational services in Israel, restricted access to water, and economic trouble. One of the most interesting claims made in this debate is by the Israeli Defense Ministry itself. In a video on their website, the Ministry of Defense explicitly claims that the West Bank Barrier is not a border. The West Bank Barrier lets some people in and keeps some people out. It lets some goods in and keeps some goods out. The West Bank Barrier divides people from their land, their families, and their workplaces. It divides Israel from Palestine, for good or bad, on purpose. It controls and accounts for the exchanges that take place between Israel and Palestine, for good or bad, on purpose. And yet, its builders insist it's not a border. Well then, what is a border? Today on Pioneer Radio, we'll hear from five people, each surrounded and divided by their own definitions, experiences, and feelings about borders. We ask these five people the same three questions. What do you take a border to be? Where have you experienced borders in your lifetime? And do you consider borders to be largely positive or largely negative concepts? Their responses varied and resulted in the following Pioneer Radio pre-produced first annual roundtable discussion by people who weren't actually in the room with one another. Enjoy.
Exchange for something as protection or...
Thank you.
What do I see borders to be? Well, of course, there's no simple answer to that. The first thing most people probably think of is like a geopolitical border.
Well, for me, in I look at it in so many different ways. I mean, there's natural borders which occur geographically in the terrain, like a river can be a border, a mountain range can be a border.
Mm-hmm.
Those, to me, are the simplest forms of borders. And even if you look at animals construct their own borders as well. You know, they move in packs, they mark their territory,
yeah.
They hunt in a particular territory.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, you go up the food chain to humankind, and really, are they doing anything different? You know, and then you add on top of that the control of a territory, hopefully for the sake of a good of a community. You know,
mm-hmm.
when you join that community and accept those boundaries, supposedly you're giving up something in exchange for something as protection or a better life.
Mm-hmm.
So, but personally, I don't think we're much different than the naturalistic, you know, the animals in that sense. We've just kind of crafted them a lot differently.
Well, borders, there's the standard definition where, you know, it's a political thing. And
mm-hmm.
that's administrators and all those people have figured out that this is the area they want to control.
I would define borders as lines that right now are defining geographic regions and not so much only geographic regions, but also, you know, places where governments have you know, instituted laws and have determined you know, what is or isn't going to be able to happen in that particular area. And I think borders often they're incredibly powerful because they either allow a person a measure of freedom, something obviously that we enjoy a lot in our country, but obviously in many other places they don't enjoy the same kind of freedom simply because they're behind a particular line that's been drawn.
I take borders to be essentially human constructions that were developed at a time when people were developing what I consider imagined communities. They've been there for whatever it's worth to somewhat develop what eventually became to be known as the nation state, which, like I said a few minutes ago, is it really is a human construct, and it's and maintaining the borders meant essentially creating, like I said, an imagined community of sorts. I'm not denying the fact that societies, groups, or otherwise did develop, but the idea of borders is, for the most part, something that's been more or less recent. By that, I mean the last, I'd say some of the major constructs of borders, the last probably, you know, 500 to 600 years, give or take, at least the way that we see them in the modern sense of it. So,
mm-hmm.
as you probably guess, I would put that particular sense in a spectrum of sort of like a whole bunch of other senses that link up. It's not just simply a kind of line that separates. I think it's a kind of, it's sort of a zone of transitions and exchanges,
mm-hmm.
and control, I guess.
It's sort of something that sort of keeps you from doing things. Sometimes they're good because they limit you from doing things you're not supposed to. Like,
yeah.
You know, right now the border keeps me from doing certain things because there's certain proprieties and things like that. And those are sort of like your borders as well.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes they're designed to keep people in, sometimes they're designed to keep people out.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do both.
Borders are a zone in which certain accounts or methods of accounting can take place.
And I see it all the time. Like being that I work up way up north, is that the border is what is our area to can look after. Anything outside of it is no longer part of it. and everybody puts that forward. But that sort of affects everybody in their daily lives. Like, we create our own borders for ourselves on based on, like, some people expand them extremely well, and some of them keep them small.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you cross your borders, it's like a new experience, going to some place that's totally new. Your area of comfort, sort of.
But we have, like I said, we've designed borders as a way to keep people out,
mm-hmm.
and we've constructed, you know, an enormous amount of institutional, you know, structures and so forth to do precisely just that. You know, imagine communities have to be sustained. How do you sustain them? By creating, for example, I don't know, educational systems that teach mythologies of what does it mean to be a community, what do you mean by people, and most often we attempt to do that by quote unquote cleaning up. Those are the parts of the stories that doesn't make our imagined community clean or clear in any ways.
Yeah, like, you know, there's the economic distribution in a city. Those are kinds of borders, or they create borders.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, they can affect, they do affect people in the sense of tacitly, not, I don't want to say determining, but suggesting perhaps who can associate with whom.
Yeah.
Sort of where is the right place to be.
Yeah.
And then those things can feed into different stereotypes about people who live in different parts of your city. Like the different boroughs in Toronto, not boroughs, I guess, the different neighborhoods in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
They're certainly not definite borders, but you have there's like a different kind of sort of flavor emerges on your
mm-hmm.
sort of palate when you go from sort of one neighborhood to another.
Mm-hmm.
And there are sort of distinctions, sort of like, I guess, you know, more or less kind of vague distinctions between different parts of the city and things like that. So there are kinds of, there are borders, and these borders are not just porous, but the borders themselves are not really well defined, even though they're there. So you kind of sort of melt from one area into another area.
Yeah.
So that's a border that's to me, that's a kind of border that is there, but it's not really a big deal, and it doesn't really affect anybody in a huge way, I don't think.
You know, I lived in Berlin in 79 when the wall was still up, and I remember as a child, you know, I was brought up in the era of the arms race. And so borders were very real and very fearsome to me. And, you know, I also come from a military background, and the Cold War was at its height, and we were absolutely petrified, and I imagine they were petrified of us. But I remember when I went to Berlin in 79, the first thing I did was run down to look at the Berlin Wall, because I'd heard about it my entire life. You know, it was something that was amazing to me to actually stand in the shadow of that wall, after having studied so much about the history and the culture, and when I went down there and actually stood there, and you know, the wall was there, going to look at the Brandenburg Gate, which was in East Germany, and I wasn't allowed to go into East Germany
mm-hmm.
because of my work over there, and just, you know, I was kept in a 110 miles within enemy lines in this city, and I wasn't allowed to. I mean, I was surrounded by borders.
Well, I've encountered borders, particularly probably my first case would have been in Cyprus, where I'm from, and we essentially lived in what was this, but at the time a bicommunal sort of construct, an island where, you know, two communities lived historically side by side, the Greeks and the Turks. All of a sudden, we were. We found ourselves after a sort of a horrible war, and I'm not going to give sort of blame on because both sides have been blamed. And from that war in 1974, we developed, meaning the two sides developed, a distinct sort of divide where, you know, either side referred to it in some way as borders. And that meant, you know, keeping out. And in some respects was the notion that you can keep out those that do not fit within that imagined community, that imagined construct.
chance, one chance to get everything right. We have one chance, one chance, and if we're lucky, we might. My friends, my habits, my family, they mean so much to me. I just don't think that it's right. So many ships sailing, just to head back out again and go off sinking.
When I went to Korea, when I come into Gimpo Airport and I switched over to the local flight and then I flew over to Daegu, I came through customs and the wall, you couldn't see it. But at a certain point, it opens up, and then you're there. And it was like, almost like a scary thing of breaking that border, because I didn't know whether or not I was going to be picked up on the other end by the people that were employing me.
Hmm.
So I stepped through that, and it was a very scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I took the adventure of like, ooh. And I saw them breaking that. And breaking those borders are, I actually enjoy that. But I'm like a, you know, a bit of an extrovert. I used to, well, in Korea, I couldn't read the signs or anything like that because they were in Korean. So I'd stick my head in different doors and see what the businesses were and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're also seeing today that borders, geographical borders, are challenged to a great measure now by the advent of the Internet. And
mm-hmm.
I would throw out an idea like who you are and what you can say is really kind of defined by what border that you live behind or you're born behind, and that the Internet's really challenging that whole concept by providing a voice to anyone with access. And
mm-hmm.
so now a border, it doesn't matter as much that I live behind a particular border as long as my voice can get out there. The power, if you will, to be able to provide a voice to the people has been moved from, say, the steps of a state or national capital building, or its halls, a place where one may or may not be able to get to physically. Really, it's been moved from there to the person with a, you know, with an iPhone standing in the middle of a demonstration
mm-hmm.
and showing us what's going on and then telling us what's going on and what they think about it. And
mm-hmm.
that's not being determined by any particular border that they're behind or even rights or privileges that might be determined by that government,
mm-hmm.
as we've seen so clearly in all these demonstrations that are going on in the Middle East and are taking place here and now. And we enjoy these freedoms, the freedoms of expression. It's something that we hold very near and dear here in our countries. But so that power to be able to provide a voice has now been moved from, you know, being able to hold your sign up, you know, on the streets of Tehran or whatever, to the network operations centers where a few keystrokes and a command line interface in Border Gateway Protocol, for example, determines who can say and who can express and what areas actually are going to have access and what areas are going to have a voice. So that border has really, really been moved over into something very nebulous, this whole, the whole technology piece.
Well, I don't know. For me, For me, it obviously has a lot to do with ideas, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This is a source of frustration for me, especially when it comes to, you know, trying to deal with people that I care about, really, in the sense that, I see certain problems in our country right now, and I don't think people have developed the vocabulary for dealing with them properly.
Mm-hmm.
The growth of this kind of political culture
mm-hmm.
in Ottawa, there's this sort of entrenchment and then this sort of diminishing power of a vote.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the response to this is to keep voting, even though you know damn well that it, your government is getting farther and farther away from contact. And it's very upsetting to see people so frustrated by what's going on, but they somehow they can't kind of diagnose it, and there's sort of this vocabulary of kind of parliamentarian liberal democracy that people still cling to. Not that I blame them for that, but it is a border because it actually prevents them from seeing sort of the lay of the land and actually being able to observe and intervene in the dynamics that are actually taking place. So that's a border, like this kind of language, sort of conceptual border. That's something that's very evident for me, and I find it, sometimes I find it kind of isolating. Practically speaking, I think measures have been taken to erase the fact that this is a limit that it is a horizon. The last federal election, I went down to an electoral station to inquire about protest votes and managed to get a hold of one of their procedural manuals or whatever. And in fact, there is no legal way to issue a protest vote in Canada. If you drop it in the ballot, it just gets discarded. The only way to really issue a protest vote is to announce in front of the whole polling station that you're going to spoil your ballot. And if I'm not mistaken, then that's not really legal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's very, very hard. It's very hard to try to explain myself to people and actually get them to see what I'm trying to say. And I think that separates me from a lot of my friends. And that's another border, is the feeling that a lot of us have today that we should feel alone, and that we should face our problems just alone, or that we can face our problems just alone. And that's a border of another kind that intersects with these other sort of institutional borders. For me, it's more a matter of dynamics. And the shifts that have taken place have made this language bad for us at the moment, because we can't use it responsibly since we don't see that it has an outsize.
So we don't see that there's actually a border there. We just see the inside.
That's the thing, right? It's like Wittgenstein said, is we thought we were looking at the true picture, and in fact we were just trapped by the frame. And so I think that there's a kind of very concrete practical border that's concomitant with sort of this ideal or conceptual border that we are operating within, where we can't see a way out, and we think that the only response is to just vote and vote and vote, no matter how debauched the system comes and no matter how absurd the exercise becomes, and we end up really circling the drain of nihilism. And so there's a very powerful border in place, and it's the impression of the absence of a border.
As we have gone about sort of creating sort of our social experiences and so forth, in some respects, at the personal level, probably I'd say there has been some positive, you know. But theoretically and morally and ethically, I'd say, you know, we on the one hand, again, I'm talking in my own mind, a dialectic. On the one hand, I'm saying that they're good because it makes life easy. You know, growing up, for example, in within the Greek construct of an imagined community, it's pretty decent. But on the other hand, it's a little bit too clean, a little bit too, you know, sort of sanitized, and might exclude a lot of other people. It excludes, for example, the experiences in the case of Cyprus, that, you know, the Turks that were part of our broader community, that all of a sudden we have to exclude at some point or another. And the same probably, I would say, with in the construction of the Turkish nation, too, after the Ottoman Empire. I think, so on the one hand, at the personal level, you feel this safety. You feel that, those myths and those notions and those concepts about what it means to be people, you know, we sort of buy into them and we pass them on, especially in education otherwise. But at the same time, too, like I said, you know, looking at now, I would say also something else, too, that bothers me right now, too, is that living in at the time of this massive movement of people, you know, through the various aspects of globalization. Now, I won't get into what they are, but we're seeing now these new barriers that are coming up, for me, the border becomes more and more negative, and we're telling people, for example, we don't want them, and it's interesting as we tend to not want people that tend to look less and less like us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you see immigration patterns, and when the European Union, you know, North America, there's a certain okay to allow sort of the types of people that look more like quote unquote us into our midst and be part of our magic community, but we don't want others, you know. So we put those kind of barriers and divide. So again, I'm sort of, on the one hand, there's a certain safety notion of borders, but on the other hand, I would say at the same time too, I'm somewhat disappointed. At times I'm frustrated with what I'm hearing now, putting up more borders and more barriers, and you know, and we all know what's going on, for example, in Israel and the West Bank too. Building the physical border itself, which is the ultimate, in my opinion, of the division and the construct that divides. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. And then you take a look at all the gated communities across North America and stuff like that. That's a fear thing that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
People are trying to control things so that they can have things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you cross a border, it's usually, there is a fear element involved in it.
Yeah.
Because you're doing something that's beyond yourself. And, like, the borders sometimes protect you from doing something beyond yourself, but, you know, pushing yourself to go beyond makes you a much better person.
And I also think, too, you can't ignore the fact that people are always trying to push their borders,
mm-hmm.
widen them, make them bigger, and get more. And I wonder why that is. You know, is it for power? Is it just to say you've occupied it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's got to be a point of critical mass where you just can't control anymore.
Yeah.
Or it controls you.
Yeah.
You know, I've been starting dialogues with people in different universities, and we've been to several conferences on the idea of globalization and what that means exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the discussion is hopeful, and people see the dissolution of borders because of the technologies that we're using.
Mm-hmm.
But other people don't want to let go of their, they see the dissolution of borders as the letting go of their cultural and ethnic identities. So I'm grappling with the borders as, you know, I think I've already said to you, is this a polarizing construct or is it a unifying one? And I can see where in an idealistic world it would be unifying to dissolve them,
mm-hmm.
but I don't see how, I don't see that as happening. I think it's the sort of plight of humanity,
mm-hmm.
to want to set boundaries on themselves and claim things for their own.
Blame it on the Tetons. Yeah, I need a scapegoat.
You've been listening to Pioneer Radio on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. That's our show. Special thanks to Rob, Tom, Tony, Frank, and Mom. Our musical and technical support this week was provided by Riley Jones. Our producer and caterer was Andrew Robinson. Thanks for listening. See you next week.